and I become the evidence custodian for a search of the New York City coroner's office, the medical examiner's office, because there had been 30 in police custody deaths.
I didn't even know what he meant. And what he meant was, I'm not hired there.
You're never going to do undercover where people know. You're going to go to outside places. Yeah.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor, and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today in the studio is...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes, former state and federal prosecutor. Jim, we're back in the studio live together.
Yes, and we... have a very special return guest, one of my very good friends and fellow colleagues.
Derek Levasseur, yeah, retired cop and host of Breaking Homicide on Discovery ID.
By the way, I noticed, Jim, that you claimed him as one of your very good friends, as if he's not also one of my very good friends.
Well, you just didn't say it, so I have no idea why you didn't say that, Francie.
I prefer Francie.
Thank you, Derek. Oh, my God. Yeah. That's going to be hashtag yeah. I prefer Francie.
Let's get it trending.
This is trending. This is great.
Oh, good Lord. Now I have two of them. Oh. Yep. Anyway, I hope our listeners can put up with that. But anyway, Derek, we want you to talk about a case today. What part of your career did this case occur in?
We're going back to the very beginning. I got hired when I was 20 years old, and this was almost immediately after that as a patrolman.
As a patrolman for what department?
Central Falls Police Department in Central Falls, Rhode Island.
Central Falls, Rhode Island. Is that like a big town?
No, 1.2 square miles. But we're one of the most densely populated cities in the entire country.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. We have like over 30,000 people.
In 1.2 miles?
Yeah, it's very, very busy. Very, very
busy. And is there... a Central Falls there? Is there a falls in the center
of town?
Absolutely
not. No.
There's a, why not?
Listen, our only claim to fame is the extremely talented Viola Davis is from there. Oh, really? Born and raised, her whole family still lives there.
Well, wow. So are you. So the extremely talented Viola Davis and the extremely talented Derek Levasseur are both from Central Falls.
I've never thought I'd hear
by
that
the way,
together.
I have one bone to pick with you, Derek, before we
There's
get started.
Many.
Yeah, no, just one, because I don't want to ruin our friendship. Mm. But
as tentative as it
that's
is.
That's right. Yeah. But
that trending could change.
I know it could change really quick, so I'm risking it. I'm going to risk it. I understand you pronounce your name the way you said it.
Yep.
But I minored in French in college, and so it should be Levasseur.
Levasseur.
So why isn't it? That's my question.
Because I'm not fancy. You know, I own my Irish side.
Okay.
He's a regular guy.
What you're saying, though, is technically it's Levasseur.
Levasseur, correct.
Okay, fantastic. Correct. See, Canadian. I no longer have a bone to pick with you.
That's it, Levasseur. And I didn't want to get beat up in high school, so I figured I'd stick with Levasseur.
Smart. Yeah. It seems smart. Okay, so you're a patrolman in the high crime town of? I don't know. It doesn't sound like there
Central
could be any crime
Falls,
there.
Central Falls, high density, tiny little town of 1.2
Square miles.
That's like 50
Rhode
feet
Island.
By 50
yep.
feet.
Yep.
Is
it's,
there even
it's like
any,
a video game. It's crazy.
Is there even any crime in Rhode Island
at all?
I don't
know, but wait a second. 1.2 square miles, literally. It has to be like a quarter mile by a quarter mile.
Yeah,
right?
You can get from one end of the city to the other in like 3 minutes. Yeah,
on foot.
Crazy. but again, for a lot of these urban communities, everything is triple deckers, right? Everything is three family homes. It's not a lot of single family homes there. So you have multiple... thousands of houses on each street, and they're all three family homes. So a lot of people in a very small area that you got to cover. And we only have about 40 to 50 police officers. So it gets busy. On any shift, you can have only 4 or 5 patrolmen in charge of the entire city.
Wow. And what made you pick Central Falls, Rhode Island?
Born and raised. Born and raised.
Oh, hometown boy.
Yep. I grew up there. I was, I didn't have intentions on being a police officer. I wanted to play college baseball. Who didn't? I went to college. Well, you know, that was my aspiration. I was a pretty good ball player. Went to college for 2 years. Junior college, was wanted to go pro.
What position did you play?
Pitcher.
Really? Pitcher. My father was a pitcher.
Yep.
You got to listen to this one podcast he did with Paul Sullivan. He talked about his high school baseball team and the semi-pro league that he got into. He knew every kid's name, every shoe size, what pitches they could hit. It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And he's 90 years old. It's mm-hmm. unbelievable. But yeah, he was a ball player.
Recall mm-hmm. is a Clemente inherited trait,
I think. For names with me. Yeah. Otherwise,
I struggle with names too.
Really? See?
I struggle with names.
Look at that, Francie. Us.
Hashtag yeah. He does not prefer Jim. Okay, yeah. Let's keep
yeah.
going.
Yeah, so I came home after 2 years. I was transferring to a 4-year school. Shout out Roger Williams University. And I was in criminal justice. I was poor because I was 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And the chief had kind of taken me under his wing. I wasn't always the best kid growing up. I had that typical story.
You know, the chief kind of knew you.
He definitely knew me.
Okay, he knew you.
And he said, listen, we're applying for police officers right now. And we're going to have 200 or 300 applicants, but I think you should apply. See what happens. You only need 60 credits just to get the experience so that when you graduate in 4 years, you know, you'll be better prepared. So I decided to take the test.
Wow. And apparently you passed.
I ended up finishing first out of all 300.
Wow.
First, let me see. First is pretty good.
First
seems good. I just want to note for the record, I was first in nothing in my academic career. I confess it. Nothing. Literally nothing.
Yeah, I don't think I was either.
Oh, stop, Jim.
Yeah, okay.
You do all these complicated math equations. Who are you kidding?
You went
to Fordham.
Science. I had all this really, really smart people in my classes. I did actually take a test called Axiometrics, and they told me, literally, he said, the professor who created the test said, I was looking over your results, and there's some anomalies with your score. And I said, I was drinking a Corona. I did it on the weekend. I wasn't taking it seriously. Goodbye. And he goes, no. Your logical reasoning score was 98th percentile. And I said, then there was a whole percentile of people better than me. Why don't you bother them? And he said, no, that's not the anomaly. And I said, well, what is? He said, well, your clarity score is 700 times higher than that. And I said, well, it can't be right because I have no idea what you're talking about. And he goes, we've given this test to 150,000 CEOs, and nobody has scored off the charts. You're 700 times higher than the next best score.
So you're an underachiever.
My clarity is perfect, so yeah. I know what things mean. And
this is just unbearable. I just want to note, I went to the University of Georgia, where I just barely graduated, which is what most people do from the University of Georgia, is barely graduate. I was pretty good at White Russians, but really there was no major in that.
Jaeger bombs. I'm a Boston. Yeah, that's exactly. Me. That's me.
Okay, this is why you two have parity. Yep, I get right. It. So let's go forward. So you get this job at this amazingly intense, massive police department in the middle of one of the biggest states in the world.
Yeah.
Or Rhode Island.
Yes.
And it's called Central Falls, even though there is no Central Falls. I don't get it. Yeah. Maybe somebody fell down one time because they were drinking Jaeger or White Russians.
We'll have to have a history lesson on Central Falls. I'll have to look it up. Yeah.
That would be the perfect history lesson for drunk history.
Oh, love it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Which, so by the way, Derek, job. You and I could probably star on, I'm just saying.
You can do that.
So you get this job,
mm-hmm.
and what's it like being a police officer in the same town that you grew up and weren't exactly the best kid in?
Yeah, no, it was incredible. You know, when I first got hired, I couldn't even buy my own bullets. But I got my guy, literally could not buy my own bullets.
Okay, Deputy Barney Fife.
That basically, and as you can imagine from your law enforcement background, there was plenty of material for the older guys to razz on me for, which was basically the first 6 months of my career.
Oh.
But it was great because I knew a lot of the kids from the community, so they were willing to talk to me when they weren't willing to talk to others.
Oh.
And I was empathetic to the situation. I didn't grow up with much. They didn't. Not every officer comes from the town or city where they're working. And sometimes there's a disconnect there.
Right.
So I had that instant connection with a lot of people who trusted me as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gratifying, you know, to go in there and be able to help them from the other side and also kind of change the stigma that's associated with law enforcement. Because where I'm from, Central Falls, law enforcement isn't exactly trusted in all senses.
So you put a good face on law enforcement.
I tried. I tried. Yeah. I definitely tried to. Yes, absolutely.
And I'm just thinking Johnny Depp, 21 Jump Street.
I know. And I'm just saying that, by the way, just because our listeners can't see how longingly Francie is staring into Derek's eyes.
Stop. My husband listens to this podcast.
We're both married, so, you know, it's
that's
fine.
That's right. It's just it's a I prefer Francie connection. That's all.
Okay.
That's yes. all it is. All
right. Is that what it is? Yes. Hashtag Francie connection.
We have a lot of hashtags.
That's right. There's going to be a ton.
Oh, boy. I can't wait.
It's going to be great.
Anyway. All right. So let's talk about this particular case. Do you remember what you were doing on the day that this particular case came into your life?
I do. Real quick caveat, we're talking, I'm not even a big drinker, but we're already going that way. It seems like, so I want to clarify that, but it was actually my 21st birthday.
Oh.
So I had been out having some celebratory drinks legally.
Yeah, one or two.
Legally, of course.
For the first time, because you would never drink before that.
Right, absolutely. And like any safe 21-year-old would do, especially a police officer, I didn't decide to drive home, rented a hotel room with three or four of my friends. And
there were four calm, cool, collected people.
Yep.
Yes,
and
rational.
And I decided to go to sleep at a certain period because I realized that I could not consume any more alcohol.
Mm, well,
probably a good decision.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where I was.
Okay.
So I go to bed. I get a call around 6, 7 a.m. in the morning.
Ooh.
I probably had only went to bed maybe 4 or 5 hours before that.
Okay. So you got plenty of sleep. Okay.
Plenty of sleep, feeling great. And I see the phone number, and it's the police department. And at that point, where there's a lot of overtime, you get called, you're probably getting called in. So I was like, oh, this could be bad. And instead, it's the chief of police. And that whatever I was feeling, that grogginess when I woke up, as you know, the chief of police doesn't call your cell phone.
Right. Immediately leaves you, right?
Yeah. I instantly became completely coherent. And yes, sir. How are you, sir?
Adrenaline.
Absolutely. And I'm like, he's either firing me or something happened last night that I don't remember. I don't know.
I got a call like that, too. The first day. I'm serious. My first day as a prosecutor, I got a call from Corporation Counsel, the head of the New York City Law Department, the number one guy, the biggest law firm in the country, probably in the world at the time. And it was at 3 a.m. And of course, it's my first day. I'm going to start work in a few hours. And he calls me at 3 a.m. What can I have done now?
Yeah.
And he says, I need you to come down to the office immediately. Okay. I show up at the office. I got there like about 4 in the morning. And we immediately leave, go to the New York City Medical Examiner's office.
Uh-oh.
And I become the evidence custodian for a search of the New York City coroner's office, the medical examiner's office, because there had been 30 in police custody deaths that they were doing investigations of.
Oh my God.
So we went in and seized all those files. And the first thing we did was open the safe. And the very first file on the top of the safe was John Lennon's autopsy.
Really?
Yeah. Crazy day. But I then took all those files into a conference room. I had the only keys to it and literally documented all the files. Had it maybe 20 different file cabinets filled with files of autopsies and so forth. And that's what I did for the first 6 months when I was
a prosecutor. Because you were the only one who had no connections
to the
police
yet.
There you go.
No actual connections. And that's what I was an independent evidence custodian. So
Jim got called for a good reason. My experience like this was after I got hired by the U.S. Attorney's Office. It would have been probably August of 2001. And I've been hired. I've given my notice at the district attorney's office. I've told all my judges I'm leaving. And I get a phone call while I'm sitting at my desk in the DA's office in Cobb County, Georgia. And it's a man named Bill Duffy.
Mm.
And he is the incoming United States attorney, appointee by President Bush.
I know Bill very well, actually.
I know you do.
I know you did.
And the first words out of his mouth were, "Hi, this is Bill Duffy. I want to talk to you about your interest in the U.S. Attorney's Office." And I'm thinking to myself, wait, you mean my interest in that I've just been hired there? Mm-hmm. Or I didn't even know what he meant. And what he meant was, I'm not hired there.
Well, how did that happen?
I've been unhired.
How did that happen?
It happened because Bill Duffy did not think that Francie Hakes, who maybe didn't graduate in the top of her class, was worthy of joining the United States Attorney's Office.
Then, I'm sure, knowing history, that you went in there, wowed the hell out of Bill Duffy, and he did, in fact, hire you.
He did, in fact, hire me, but I'm not sure I ever really wowed him because in the first interview, his first words were to me, you know, I wanted to talk to you because I've never heard of your law school.
All right. Yikes. So you must have super wowed him. Otherwise, why would you work for him?
Well, that's another story for another day. But anyway, Derek, so I think we've all gotten that weird boss call.
Early in the morning.
Tell us what yours was about. Hey, if y'all are looking for a fun way to pass the time while still engaging your brain and even watching great visuals, the answer is Best Fiends. It is an absolutely fantastic game where you collect characters and you solve challenging puzzles. It has a great story, it engages your brain, and it's casual. Anyone can play, but it's made for adults, and you can spend as much or as little time as you want in the game. My favorite part's collecting diamonds, of course, and gold. There's cool fruit, great colors, and really fun characters like bugs and slugs. And that keeps me invested in this 5-star rated game. They're challenging and fun puzzles. If you play this game, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. Best Fiends is a unique and exciting puzzle experience, unlike any other puzzle game out there. And Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events, so it never gets old. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. This is a 5-star rated mobile game on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. The download is free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R or Best Fiends. Have I told y'all how much I love my cats, Bella and Mia? When I travel, I miss them just like they're my kids. When I come home, they come running. They sleep with me. They snuggle with me when I watch TV. My husband and I love them. But let's be honest. The worst part about being a cat owner is dealing with the cat litter. It's messy. It's smelly. It's heavy. And can I really say conventional cat litter is outright barbaric? And that's why we switched to Pretty Litter. Pretty Litter is kitty litter 2.0. It's shipped right to my door in a small, lightweight bag that lasts the entire month. No more running to the pet store or storing heavy, opened bags of cat litter in my closet. And Pretty Litter has next-level odor protection. It uses these cool, super-absorbent crystals that actually work to trap and conceal odor and moisture. So no smell, no mess. Nobody knows we have two cats, or maybe more if I can convince my husband of it. Forget about that dirty clay or compost that's completely gross to clean up. But the best part about Pretty Litter, it even monitors your cat's health. Pretty Litter changes colors to detect underlying illnesses before medical care is needed, which saves you money and stress and maybe even your cat's life. So do what I did and make the switch to Pretty Litter today by visiting prettylitter.com and use promo code BESTCASE for 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code BESTCASE for 20% off. prettylitter.com, promo code BESTCASE.
Yeah, so he calls me and he says, listen, I don't know if you're up for it. Again, you never turn. I'm already going to say yes no matter what he says, obviously. But he just says, listen, we just had the Smithfield Police Department, which was a neighboring agency, reach out. And they have some intelligence that some individuals who play on the lacrosse team at a local university, pretty big university. I'm not going to say the name of it, although you can Google it. It's all public information now. Was selling drugs on campus from their dorm rooms, and yet they couldn't find out where it was coming from. They thought they knew the dorm room. They've done a couple searches, nothing. Can't turn up anything. And it's like 4 or 5 different individuals who are involved, and yet they can't infiltrate where it's coming from and how they're hiding it from them. But they had just arrested someone who was close with that group, and they wanted to bring me in. So just like any undercover operation, you get a snitch, someone you roll. They're willing to introduce you as someone that's, you know, accepted by them, and therefore they're vouching for you. And we'd like you to go in because of how you look. I was 21 years old. I probably looked even younger than that.
Going back to college.
Wait a minute. Didn't I 5 minutes ago say Johnny Depp and 21 Jump Street?
I know you did.
I think I'm psychic.
Well, you're psychotic anyway. So a lot of the same letters. Yeah.
Not the same thing at all. Anyway, go ahead.
So yeah, he says, listen, are you up for it? Yes, I'm up for it. So he's like, okay, get some sleep. You know, this isn't going to be till later tonight. And then get some food in your stomach and get ready to go. So I couldn't go back to sleep. Obviously,
right.
At that point,
when you want to be
a cop, yes, you want to be you wanted to experience everything. But for me, it was movies like Bad Boys and Donnie Brasco and stuff like that, where I'd watch those movies and that's what I wanted to be.
And so, just in case our listeners don't know who Donnie Brasco is, that was the undercover persona of Joe Pistone, one of my colleagues at the FBI, who actually became a made guy mm-hmm. in the mafia in New York City. And it was the first time anything like that had ever happened, that any FBI agent had ever penetrated the mafia that deeply. He's a legend in the FBI and in the movie world, because he played opposite, or his character played opposite Al Pacino, right?
The man.
Yeah, the man.
And Johnny Depp didn't do that bad of a job.
No, he didn't.
He crushed that role. And it was
Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
So basically I get back to the station, and you guys all know this. You know, a lot of people are under the impression that if you work in Central Falls, you're only going to do undercover in Central Falls, which it's exactly the opposite. You're never going to do undercover where people know. You're going to go to outside places where people may not recognize you.
Except if you're Jim Clemente and you work for the FBI and they put you deep cover in Manhattan where you live. So that was crazy, but that was another episode. But go ahead.
Yeah. So they say, hey, listen, we're not going to wire you up. That's a false thing. That sometimes we're always going to have a wire on you. They had a little Motorola pager on me. They teamed me up with a local officer from that specific agency, a female officer who was going to be my girlfriend. They gave me a cover story. They said, you know, you're going to say you play lacrosse in New York. You're a transfer student. We're going to have you go in there and just have fun. You know,
wait, this is so exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was excited about it. I'm like, wait, you're going to pay me to do this?
But what if they ask you lacrosse-y questions?
I did a lot. I was doing it. Well, first I was kind of debriefing the guy that played lacrosse. Mm-hmm. And I knew a little bit about lacrosse. Never played it in my life. If they asked me to pick up a stick, we were screwed.
Yeah.
The op was over. The opera's over. But we knew there was a party that night. So they just wanted to say
that you could do.
Yeah, that I could do. And it had been a couple years since I had done anything that crazy, because I was playing college ball. But I could cover it.
But you had the college athlete thing down.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew the
lingo and the attitude.
The
swag.
Yeah. The swag is the word I was going to
go with. Hashtag the swag.
Hashtag the swag. We got a lot of hashtags. I need to get a pen.
They just said, basically, we don't know if this is going to be a one night thing. We don't know if this is going to be like a 4-night thing. You might just have to stay there as long as you need to until you find out who it is and where they're keeping it. Right. So we head on over. Meet the couple people involved that we think are possibly connected to it.
So this is you and your undercover girlfriend.
Yep, undercover girlfriend.
And did you have any chemistry with this other police officer?
She was no comment. I think I had a girlfriend at the time.
No comment.
That girlfriend is now my wife. So no comment.
No, of course. It was only a professional relationship.
I could tell you that she was fit for the role and that I know that the other students, that the targets that we were going after, were more than happy to let her be a part of the party.
Really?
Derek is really good at coded language.
She was intelligent.
Yes.
Gracious.
Yes.
You know, college-y looking.
Yeah.
College-y looking.
She was ready to go. She was dressed the part. You know, we had kind of developed our backstory a little bit. We were from New York transferring, and we were kind of just looking to see if this is something we wanted to do permanently.
Yeah. And I did a bunch of these short-term undercover things, and you're really doing it on the fly. You're creating stuff, you're talking back and forth, and you're in. You know, it's
and
not
we wanted
like,
to get in and out because we knew the college didn't want this to be a long-term thing.
Right.
It's not a good look optics-wise.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, so they wanted it to be quick.
All right, so what were you wearing?
Oh, God, that's a great question. I mean, I was like, well, what would a college student wear? And I'm like, probably the same stuff that I wear every day anyways. Yeah.
Sneakers, jeans, and t-shirt.
Exactly. So sneakers, jeans, and t-shirt. She dressed up a little bit more. I do remember that because I was like, you're dressed up for like the club right now. Yeah. I don't know if that's going to fly. We're going to like a keg party.
Uh-huh.
But she's like, no, we'll be good. And she was right. Yeah. She was fine. They did not.
Yeah, they don't
always
turn girls
have
away
to dress up more than guys.
So gun or no gun?
No gun. All I had was I did have my cell phone on me. I believe I had like the old school pager where they could kind of hear certain things, but they never work, especially in a concrete dorm room. They never work.
Transmission.
There was a few different guys, my eyes and my ears. They were sitting in a truck not too far from the location. God forbid.
So you're not wired.
No.
So here's what's interesting question for me. Obviously, at this table, I'm the only one who's never gone undercover or been in any sort of
hashtag. Francie's not an undercover agent, just so you know.
So true. Although every Southern woman has the innate ability, by the way.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It's born in us. Anyway, so I've never been in that situation, but if you're not wired, you don't have like a safe word, you don't have a code you can give if they need to break down the door because someone's got a gun in your face if you're made somehow, this seems high risk to me. So how do you all arrange to make it not quite so high risk?
Every case is high risk because you don't know if there's going to be a gun there. You're right. But based on the intelligence that they had from the person they had arrested, there was no firearms on the campus. These were college kids who were athletes who were trying to have a little extra fun on the side, make a little extra cash. So again, you always assume there's a gun there, but we had good intelligence that there wasn't. And as far as some of the operations you can go on where you know you're not the only gun in the room, we felt pretty confident. And they were close by. I knew based on the situation, based on the guys I was dealing with, if I had to get out of that room under, you know, a stressful situation, I could defend myself long enough to get out of that room and run down the hallway or make a phone call, because I did have a cell phone, to call the guys outside who were outside in a Jeep Cherokee about 15 feet away.
Okay.
And there's like four mongrels in that thing and that are going to come in there and break down every door if they have to get us. So there
was backup.
Yeah, there was
just backup. Not the most reliable way to get to them.
You know, right. It's just so interesting. And I just have so much respect for you guys and for law enforcement around the country. Except for Jim.
Did Francis? She said you guys.
No, I didn't mean you, Jim.
That was plural.
It wasn't you.
I heard it.
And around the world, really, because it takes a special kind of a person to be able to just say, yeah, I'll do that. I mean, there's lots of us, and I put me in this category, lots of us who think to ourselves, I don't know if I could put myself out there like that and be at risk. It's so unknown. You can't control the situation. You don't know what's going to happen. And I just want to say thank you, because it is important that we respect what our police officers and agents are doing in this country every day. Yeah. Somewhere in this country, well, lots of places in this country, right this minute, there are lots of law enforcement officers and agents at risk doing this to protect the public.
Counter drug cases, counterintelligence cases, counterterrorism cases, every day.
And as you just mentioned, a lot more dangerous than the situation we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
You know, but still, you didn't know.
It could have been dangerous.
Exactly.
Yeah. You were literally 21 and one day.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're just a kid as a cop, and this is a very new thing for you. So tell me what it was like walking in the door.
It was surreal because, again, it wasn't that long ago that I was doing it from a personal, you know, side of things. So it felt very natural. I wasn't out of my element. We were talking a lot about sports, not specifically. I blended in very quickly. They accepted me right away. I just was basically myself. I can't say that I went in there and had to develop this character. I'd be lying if I said that. It was kind of who I was. Again, I was only 21 years old. These kids are 19, 20 themselves. And so we had a lot in common naturally. Not all bad guys are people who are doing bad things.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes good people make bad decisions.
Right.
And overall, I don't think these guys were like this criminal network. They were just making some really poor decisions. And I was able to identify very quickly who the guys were that I needed to attach myself to.
Mm-hmm. And when you did, I mean, and obviously was your approach that, you know, you basically were looking for something, or you were just being very passive?
No, I was looking for something, and we were able to, I believe we got a couple bags of marijuana. I told them that I wanted to do it with my girlfriend later when we were alone. That's kind of my thing.
And yeah.
I didn't,
to avoid doing drugs as a police officer.
Right.
That's correct.
Yep. And
but, if you had to, did you get, like in the FBI, we would get DOJ pre-authorization for criminal activity if it was a situation where we might have to do drugs or, get involved in something that wasn't legal? Never would get to the place where we'd actually hurt somebody or kill somebody, but you have to have prior approval before you can do it. If you just jump into an undercover thing and start using drugs and then they find out about it, say goodbye to your job and say hello to jail.
Right. Yeah, I don't believe there was no pre-approval. They didn't give me the go-ahead to do it. Honestly, whether it would have got me in trouble or not, if I was in a situation where I felt that my, life was in danger. Or if I didn't smoke a joint, to be honest with you, I would have done it and wrote it up afterwards and explained myself why I had to do it under those circumstances. But fortunately, in this situation, it wasn't the case. Obviously, on the bigger cases, you may have to, especially a larger deal. But in the smaller ones, it's like, listen, you're selling me a $100 bag of weed or $180 bucks worth of coke. don't ask me to do it in front of you. Are you serious? I don't even want it now if you're going to question me. That's right. You put it back on a little reverse psychology right. on them mm-hmm. where it's like, dude, are you really questioning me over $180 worth of coke? You think I'm a cop? Look at me. You know, right. I don't even have facial hair. Why? So, I mean, it's one of those things where.
You do now.
Yeah, but, I do now. Yeah.
But okay. So, and what happened? Like, did they ask you to do it? They bought your story?
Yeah. I bought a little bit. And what's the thing that all college kids gravitate towards? Video games. So it gets funny. I realized pretty quickly who the alpha is, who's the guy, who everyone is walking up to, who's leaving the room with him, how quickly he's coming back. He's making phone calls. And you can just tell he has this bravado about him where he thinks he's the best guy in the room. And you can just tell that's the guy I want to talk to, right? So build a relationship with him, find some commonalities, even if they weren't true. I just, oh, yeah, me too. I love that. You know, you love the New York Giant? Me too. Love them too. And so he's like, let's go play some Madden. Madden football, right? So we go back to his room, which is like two rooms down, and we're sitting on his couch and we're playing the game, and we're playing it on a PlayStation, right? But what I notice right next to it is an Xbox. And that's not really uncommon. A lot of times they'll have two systems, but he's been drinking a lot. He's getting pretty cocky. He really is like, dude, you know, and I used my first name when I was undercover. I always did.
Yeah, I did too.
I always used my first name. So he's like, Derek, I really like you, man. And I was like, listen, I don't know what you're trying to get into, but I can get you into a lot bigger business from New York. I can bring it down here, but I got to know that, like, it's not going to come back. Nobody's going to get pinched. And he goes, man, you know why they're never going to catch me? I'm going to show you why. And there was nobody else in the room. So he gets up and he spins around the Xbox, and it was completely hollowed out. Mm. And he goes and he pulls off the back. And sure enough, the bags of coke and the weed are right inside. And he goes, that's why they're never going to catch me. And I go, you know what, man? You're smart. You are a smart guy.
Because like grown up cops wouldn't open the Xbox.
Well, I mean, probably. they never brought dogs in there. You would think they would have hit on that. I mean, this was very, very early on. I don't think the Smithfield PD had done really any work. They were trying to get it from the inside. But I just said, wow, that's great. And yeah, you know what? You got a future. You're going to be all right. And I can tell you within like 12 hours, they were taking his door off the hinges. So, or they knocked politely. And
yeah, probably.
And, it actually went, there was actually, I think, 9 or 10 people who ended up being arrested for it, because one guy got arrested, then another guy rolled, then another guy rolled. And it was an affluent community of kids who were from Maryland. They had a lot of money. They were bringing it in. And there was some date rape drugs involved as well.
Oh, wow. So yeah. Let's back up a little bit. So he made that admission to you. You knew now you had the source. Mm-hmm. What do you do? What time of the night is this? And when are you getting the hell out of there?
This was like 1 or 2 in the morning. And then we were on such good terms. He wanted to go down to another university in Providence. I can say that Johnston and Wales. And he wanted to go down there and actually pick up more. Mm. So I remember being like, now I'm really into it. I'm like, let me go with him. And they're like, absolutely not. We're not ready for that. And so they turned it down.
That's what
I know. That was the supplier.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, it sounds more like it's just another kid who has more than he has that night. But I was like, I'm ready to go. And they're like, well, she has my partner. She wasn't comfortable getting in the car. And I'm like, and like, we're not set up for it. We're going to put you in a vehicle. We could lose you. They could bring you somewhere else.
Where there are guns.
Yeah. And I was pissed. No, I was pissed.
It's a safety thing. Come on.
Yeah. Derek. But I was ready to go. But we didn't. And it kind of ended there, but I left, came back, wrote up my, you know, my witness statement, my, you know, whatever we needed. And when it went to, do you want to go into the court aspect of it?
Yeah, sure, but before you get to the court, so you obviously have sort of built rapport with this guy, you know, and 12 hours later, he's getting his door kicked in.
Yeah.
And does he end up giving the connection down at the other school? Does he end up giving all that up?
That's a good question. I don't know. Okay. I don't know how far down the rabbit hole they went. I really don't. I know they just wanted to get the problem out of that because it's a very good university.
I know, but see, that's what I worried about. I know.
I'm with you.
I know. And
they bit off the head of the snake, but they just another one's going to go back.
That's the thing about small jurisdictions especially is it ends there. I mean, I did that as a state prosecutor. Lots of cases like this. Lots of cases.
But as a federal prosecutor, you worked a lot with the FBI, and we build an entire org chart.
Yes.
You just find everything, you build your way all the way up to the top. You make sure you take out the whole organization.
That's how you have a real impact.
Yes.
That's how you have a real impact.
It doesn't just keep this school safe for these months.
Well, it doesn't just move the drugs from one community to another. So my question is, 12 hours later, they were taking his door off the hinges. Did they find the stash that you had seen in the Xbox?
Oh, yeah. And they found a lot more because they thought it was so genius that a few of them were doing it. I didn't see that personally from the rooms, but now that they knew where to look, I'm sure they had the dog there. I wasn't there for that part of it. They took it on. It was a local thing. They just did it. I was back home catching up on some Z's, but I'm assuming they found out the connection in Johnson Wells and passed it along to Providence Police. But I don't know if they did for certain.
And did you end up having to testify in a trial against these guys?
No, I thought I was going to. So again, these guys, they were from Maryland and they came for money. And they really did think that they were going to beat it. Mm-hmm. They really, really did, because they thought they knew everyone who could have ratted them out. They had that covered and they were all arrested as well. And so they all knew me that night. I actually made a lot of friends that night. And
I'm sure you did.
I recall being there and overhearing someone saying, oh, they got Derek too. And then when they, you know, they pull the lawyers out before it's going to go, they want to see if the UC is going to actually show up.
Right.
And instead of being Derek, it's, you know, Officer Derek Lavasser, and not one of them. They all took a plea deal at that point. They were like, because they knew exactly what I had seen. And so they knew it was going to be a lot harsher if we went on a stand and they all took a plea deal, which I was happy about.
Yeah, I remember how many times, you know, when you're in there and they got the main subject in the interrogation room and you're on the other side of the glass and they're like dumping everything on you. Yep. Oh, this guy started it and it's his idea and he's the one running it. Yeah. All that stuff. And then you walk in and you take out your badge and you just see him just shrink, you know, just
disappear. Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean,
to disappear into the table.
It's interesting because when we were doing undercover child exploitation investigations out of the FBI office in Atlanta, we had undercover agents posing as parents who were willing to give their children to some, you know, pedophile or someone with a sexual interest in children to sexually abuse. And when the person would travel from wherever they were coming to do that, they would arrive in Atlanta. They would get picked up usually on the plane or right as they're getting off the plane for security reasons, taken to the FBI office for interview, and in would walk the undercover agent that they had been talking to. It was often a female task force agent, and they had exchanged pictures. I mean, and it was her real photographs. They had talked on the phone. So when she walked in, the person who up until this point is like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even know what I'm doing here. Mm-hmm. She walks in and their entire demeanor changes because now they know every word they've said over the 12-month or even 18-month investigation is known and they're done.
Yep.
And that's why they almost always, what do I need to do to get out of this?
How do I get a lesser sentence?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of how long, you know?
Exactly. That's where undercovers are so key.
So what was the end result of this case?
It was their first offense for most of them. I don't think any of them served any time. Mm-hmm. They all got kicked out of the school. Mm-hmm. That was the number one thing. And it made local news. It was kind of a big deal, but the university that was involved backed it up and said, listen, if this is what we have going on, we want it taken care of. But for me personally, it told me exactly what I wanted to do in my career because I didn't really know if you'd ever I've had the opportunity to work undercover. And immediately after that, that adrenaline rush that I had being in that situation, it's not for everyone, as you know, I knew that I was in patrol at that time, but my goal, my only objective was to get into the narcotics unit. Right. That's what I wanted to do full time. And I knew right then and there that I made the right career path.
Awesome. And so Derek Lavasser, tell us, is this a best case or a worst case and why?
No, this is definitely a best case. We got the guys out of there who could have potentially caused a lot of harm to a lot of other students. And for me, like I said, personally, it was a situation where it went pretty smoothly. It doesn't always happen that way. Right. I learned that later in my career that most of the time it does go wrong and you have to kind of adapt. So this is one of the situations where no one got hurt. We got the bad guys. I think they learned from their lesson. They probably moved on and went on to hopefully do great things.
Hopefully.
So, you know, I think everyone wins in this situation. And this is definitely one of those ones where I think everyone can be proud of it.
Cool. Well, it's so cool having you here again. And
Thank you. Thank you. You'll come back over and over again
because I know you have lots of other cases to talk about.
He's just said, Jim, that he has lots of cases to talk about where things didn't go so smoothly.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I sense a worst case in the offing.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. And we really appreciate you coming in because we know how busy you are on your show.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a fascinating show. And if you haven't watched it, it's on Discovery ID and it's called
Breaking Homicide. And you're going to have to go on ID Go now because the season finale was last Friday, but it's still there.
You can watch it anytime.
Yeah. It's a fantastic show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you again, Derek, for coming. And till next time, everybody, thank you for listening to Best Case, Worst Case.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Jim Clementi at Empire Studios, LA. Engineered and edited by Mike Thal. Music composed and performed by Simba Sumba. And hosted by Wonder.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness to Light can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's d2l.org.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.